First of all, tell everybody, everybody's listening, that this class is always dedicated to Shlomi ben Moshe, our friend Bundy. And we'd like to open up, as usual, any dedications or any refuah shlemas, any names that need to be, should be mentioned, or refuahs, etc. Anybody?
Refuah shlema for Chana Alexandra Bas Chana Esther.
Chana Esther. We'll have a refuah shlema.
And Moshe Leib.
Shir HaShirim. We started last week, but I'm going to just give a few minute recap. The Song of Songs. So this, in this Maimon, the Alter Rebbe will tell us. First of all, those who learned Tanya may remember that in Igeres HaKodesh, in the last parts of Tanya, amongst the letters there, we learn that David HaMelech was reprimanded for calling the Torah songs. And his punishment was that he forgot the halacha. So there's songs, and there's songs of songs. And the Alter Rebbe says this song of songs that Shlomo HaMelech is giving us is the song from which all other songs receive their melody. All other songs receive from the song of songs. And the song of songs becomes a metaphor for the infinite realms of mystical expression that exists in the Ein Sof. The Ein Sof, by definition, is without limit, and therefore there are limitless realms of infinity that can be probed as you go from song to song of songs and song of song and songs, etc., all the way back. So the song is the song of the Torah, and the Torah itself has infinite realms. We usually divide them into four. It's called the Pardes, the Pshat, Drush, Ramez, and Soid. But within each one of those, there are infinite numbers of the infinite dimensions. And they go back to the deepest realms of what we call metaphorically God's consciousness, if you can say such a thing. It's like a human has levels of consciousness where we're either very conscious or we have deeper levels where we're not even aware of what's going on. So God himself, metaphorically, has these realms. And these realms go back and back and back, deeper and deeper and deeper. Having said that, the Maimer is going to be built on a song, the song of the Chosan and the Kal, the Sheva Bruchas that we sing at the end of the wedding ceremony, the end of the wedding meal, particularly the two Sheva Bruchas, Misameh Chosan Ima Kala, which is the last one, and the difference between that and the Simcha of the Chosan Al HaKala, which is another broker. So there are two levels the Alter Rebbe told us in Kala. Kala can be expressed by the Lashon Kiloyin. Kiloyin means to expire, to give oneself totally away, to become merged with the infinite. Kiloyin, we would say burned up. When you think about burning something, what happens to the stuff that you burn? It's still somewhere, but it's not anything you can touch. It's kiloyim. It's merged with its primordial source. That's one level of kala, Lashon kiloyim. And another level of kiloyim is Dovid HaMelech says, kolso nafshi, my soul expires. That's the level of yearning. And the level of yearning is the place where our innermost needs and our innermost longings, which are called the kala, the thing that's burning upward, yearning upward, wants to connect, but is frustrated in the connection. And when you're frustrated in the connection, you become thirsty for the connection. And that's called yearning. So the two levels of kala are, deepest level is expiration, where you merge with the source, and the lower level is on the way to that, which is the yearning to get to the source. Loosely connected with something we've been learning in Tanya in the last couple of days, the difference between Ava Kurish Ve'esh, the love like flaming fire, and the Ava B'Tainugin, which is the love of delights. So the love of flaming fire, when you're on fire, you want something. You have a passion for something. And that's the level of Kala, which is yearning and wanting to merge with the infinite. And then the other level of Ava, which is called Ava B'Tainugim, the Ava B'Tainugim is compared to water, where everything is just flowing. You're one with the flow. You're in the flow. You're in the zone. There's nothing separating between you and him. So these are become, as I said, levels of consciousness. Yes, they're levels of experience of godliness, but they're also levels we have within ourselves. I'm sure every one of us can relate to the notion of feeling separate, isolated, dumped upon, depressed, etc., angry, hostile, all those things which connotes this feeling of not connected, not being in the flow. And those are uncomfortable positions. So when we're in those uncomfortable positions, we want out of those uncomfortable positions. We want to find a way to connect with that which we yearn for, which is the total opposite. The opposite of anxiety is total peace and harmony. The opposite of feeling isolation is total communion. So we have that in ourselves. And we have, thank God, an occasional, hopefully we have it at least, occasional experiences where we're in the groove, where we're in the flow, where we're one with whatever we're doing. Examples that come to mind, a couple examples. Saw a beautiful video last week of an older, 80-plus-year-old pianist woman playing a concerto, a Tchaikovsky piano concerto. And when you watch that film, think if you've ever seen a really versatile, virtuoso musician. The fingers don't think, the fingers just flow. There's a unity between the musician and the instrument. And it was visual, and when I watched this, it was like visual. There was, you know, there's no seichel, there's no thinking going on, there's no rush, yet it's all coming from the deepest levels of the soul, the deepest levels of the mind. In fact, we know that the Chachamim have called music the quill of the soul. Music is the quill of the soul. Quill is a, you know, an ink pen, but it's not just like a pen. It's a hollow reed through which something flows. It flows out. And the flow comes from infinitely deep to infinitely low. That's the flow of God from the highest levels to down here below. So that flow is what we call the song, the way the song flows. The melody flows from the deepest levels of the soul into finally touching. Oh, thank you very much. Into finally touching the fingers and being expressed in the vocal cords until it becomes live music. So that's an exposition of what we talked about last week, Allah. Today we're going to talk about the other pair in this love relationship, in this song and dance, which is the chosen. So in this we're going to start inside in Ois Beis. Any questions before I start? From these two levels of Kala, it's just one word, yearning for something that you're far from and want to become close to, something that you want, one level of Kala, the lower level of Kala, the higher level of Kala, being in the state of complete union with your beloved. So corresponding to these two levels of Kala, Nimshach li as beis b'chinas chasonim. There are two chasonim. B'chinas and chasonim, the word chasin, it hinges on the word chus darga, to lower oneself, lower in level. But they say always jokes about yeshiva bachman, who are reaching the age of marriage. They're going to come out of the tower, the realm of pure mind, and they're going to have to get involved in the world. So that's, like the street kind of talk about what it means, chus darga. But of course what it means, there's godly, God in his essence, and somewhere a little bit removed from his essence, so to speak, it rises up in his mind to create, and he's going to create this physical stuff, so he has to come down level after level after level, so he's the chosin. And this, of course, is the marriage that occurs at Bhagavad Torah. God comes to us, Al Harsinai, on the top of Harsinai, and we come up to him. We don't come. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up. He's the emblem of Klal Yisrael, who actually walks up the mountain. But we're all assembled there. And so there's a union of above and below, of the chosin coming down and the kala coming up. And Klal Yisrael is us coming up to God. And the chosin is Hashem, who lowers himself. And this is what we say in the Sheva Brachas. Zero call, it's Halis Hasanim, Hupasam, This is the joy, the exaltation, the jubilance of the chosen, of the chasonim, underneath their chuppahs. Now, it's plural, right? Chasonim tre, there are two. Imagine, it implies two. So what are the two? We had two levels of kala. We'll now talk about two levels of chosen. We say this in davening, right? That beautified is the king, the praised and beautiful king, forever and ever. We're praising his great name, his Shemay HaGadol. So great name implies, if there's a great name, there's a small name. What does it mean when we speak about Hashem's great name and his small name? And this is going to be, there are two parts to this piece, to this particular thing. One is, the first part is discussing levels in Hashem's revelation. What, as he comes out of himself, just like we come out of ourselves when we speak from a much deeper level, he so-called comes out of himself from a deep level to create. And there are levels and levels. And the idea of coming out of oneself and extending oneself to somebody else is indicated by the name Shem. By the word shame. Why? Because when you have a shame, why do you have a name? What do you need a name for? You need a name so others can call you. You know, the baby before the naming, before 8 days at the bris, the baby is totally alive, viable, but doesn't start into a relationship until the name is due. The name is a two-way street. The name indicates where the baby come from, because it says that Ruach HaKodesh is given to parents when they name the name. And it's also now something that could be used on the outside to say, David, I'm here, let me see you. So the name has a greatness, a deepness, and it has a more external part. Shem HaGadol b'Shem HaKadosh. What do you mean? Well, like when they're sick? Or?
Yeah, when they're sick, or like when Hashem has, like,
he has multiple names. All of them express different levels of himself. And when you give a person a name like Avram Moshe, you're actually calling out two faculties, two whole structures, an Avram structure and a Moshe structure, and that's the structure of that person. That's the unique structure of that person's soul. So these names are not—they're not just tags. Right. I'm going to do a very fast recapitulation. The Song of Songs. Huh?
Yeah. Wow.
What?
Recapitulation.
Recap. Yeah. Song of Songs. It's the song which all other songs receive. It's coming from the deepest, deepest depths of things. And it's built on the metaphor of the deepest, deep relationship that exists, which is the relationship between a chosen and kala, between a man and a woman, between a bride and a groom, emblematic of the deepest relationship that exists of all, which is the relationship of Hashem to his creation. And these, of course, there are two people. There's the chosen and the kala. We spoke about the kala last week. The kala has come from two Hebrew words, chiloyin, which means to totally burn up and give yourself away, and mekale, which means to yearn. So there are two levels of kala. One, the lower one, is when you're yearning to be close to the one you love, but you're distant. And the second one is when you're united and complete harmony and connected with the one you love, in which case the differences between you disappear and it's as if you're one. Those are the two aspects of kala. Tonight we're talking about two aspects of chosen. Because in the Sheva Bruchas, about Chosin, it speaks about the jubilance, the exultation, it's called Chasonim with the Kala. The jubilance of the Chasonim, the grooms with the bride. So we have a plurality of grooms, we have a double meaning of groom, just like we had the double meaning of Kala. And this is reflected in Hashem himself, who has two distinct levels of exhibiting himself or expressing himself. We'll call them later, Soibu Kol Almin, he encompasses all worlds, and Mamali Kol Almin, he fills all worlds. But the clue indication is he has, there are two. And there are two names of Hashem, the Shem HaGadol, the great name, and the Shem HaKadon, the small name, corresponding to the one, the deeper level of Hashem's revelation, and one, the lower level of Hashem's revelation. And Hashem is revealing himself from top to bottom, right? From infinite to finite. He's the Chosen. He's coming down level. We learn that Chosen is rooted in the word Chus, to come down in level. And the Kala is expiring upward. So now we're at the beginning of, just started, the difference between Shem HaGadol, the great name of Hashem, which implies that there's a small name. Kala is from two languages. Mekala, which means to yearn. Oh, the kol, it was a pasuk in David HaMelech, says, "Not kolso nafshi l'Hashem, my soul yearns for Hashem." Kolso. And number two is Meloshin kiloyin, which means to burn up, disappear, merge with everything. So the Chosen has correspondingly two levels as well. And we're learning now, if you have the text in front of you, I published it in the WhatsApp. And why is this not moving? Well, it's not. I'm not moving at all on this. What? You think it's working?
I don't know. Yes, somebody just set up in the phone.
Comments will appear here. There's four people live. Okay. Why the video is not videoing, I don't know. So you have a still photograph of me looking down at the page. It's working over there?
No.
No, it's not.
Oh, no.
It's not. It's not. Good. I'll blame it on him. Okay. So, Lahavin, let's understand. That which our sages have said, we're in about the fifth line down. Shom Rizal. Ad shalei nivra olam, before the world was created, vayehu b'shmei b'vad, there was only he and his name. So you could ask a question, what's your name a name for? I told you earlier, it was primarily for those outside of you to get a hold of you. So what does it mean? There was only him and his name. How is it relevant to talk about having a name before the world was created? What's it for? There's nobody to call the name. Right? So why bother? And this will be understood, that which is known. Hashem is according to the language of our sages in Midrash and Gemara, he has a name, HaKodesh Baruch. And before we get into it, let me just take this. There are two parts to this name, HaKodesh Baruch. HaKodesh and Baruch. HaKodesh will imply separation. Kodesh as Rashi teaches Kodesh. Kodesh umuvdo, separated. And Baruch means to come down. So he has an aspect which is totally so-called separate. Don't take it literally, because Hashem can never be separate from anything, but a realm which we call untouchable, intangible, undefinable, which is the level of what's called Soyga Kolom, how he encompasses everything, but isn't defined in any particular way. And then Baruch Hu is how he draws himself down into everything, and every little particle of reality contains something of the divinity. So this is HaKodesh Baruch Hu, and that's what the sages have called it. HaKodesh Baruch Shebachru b'shem zeh. Why did they choose this name? V'lei b'shem esikinui machin. They could have called them other things, as they do sometimes. Kamei rachum, Hashem rachum, pechan, etc., etc. But the name that's stuck, that everybody keeps using for him, is HaKodesh Baruch. Lefi, why? Because that's moira shehu kodesh umuvdo. That on the one hand, he is separate, meaning his essence doesn't take on any different character. Nothing changes from him, by him, as a result of creation. It's Kaddish. But it's important not to understand it to meaning he's removed. There are theories of theology that do understand it that way. Hashem created and stepped back, and everything is just kind of in motion. No. We call him Hashem from the beginning, because all Hashem means is the name that we can't pronounce. The name.
Yeah, but I'm saying instead of Bison, Akbar, say
HaKodesh Baruch Hu. Instead of Hashem. Well, HaKodesh Baruch Hu, yeah. The Abishter, a lot of terminologies. But the, right. But all of them are names.
The most monosyllabic form is called.
Well, it's that also, but also because all those other things are names. Eibishter means the one above, you know. Rahman al-Islam, the merciful one should save us, as a characteristic. All of these characteristics are encapsulated in the one word name. Name, all of them. Okay, so on the one hand, he's Kodesh Umuvdo, right? We got it that he's not separated, but it's understood separate from the sense of not going through any changes as he creates things. His wholeness and allness and undefinedness and untouchableness remains the same. And you can't compare the way he draws him, those aspects of himself which are drawn into Seder Histalshuos in the orderly chain of worlds from one world to another, to him himself. All of the worlds, this expression of worlds that made the Bora Elohim Lasois, he created to do, all of that expression of worlds is only Ketipas Maimim from the Ukneus, like a drop of water in the ocean. And in other places it says it's even more like that, because a drop of water in the ocean at least is water. So there's some comparability. This separate Umuvdo has no comparability whatsoever. But it's so insignificant, we can say the creation and the energy of godliness that goes into creation is so insignificant compared to him himself. V'zehu Maimon Hazal. If you have some questions, just hold them for a moment and we'll get to them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, as our sages said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, so, it says, this is what it says. This, our sages said, you see the line begins with Maimon Hazal, it's an abbreviation. This is what our sages said. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yeshiv Esik B'Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sits down, a metaphor for brings himself down, right? The Torah is rooted way deep in him, but the expression of the Torah, and that one can learn it and be occupied with it, even Hashem himself, who gets occupied and learns Torah, is a lower expression, Yoshev, he comes down. It's like the metaphor that's brought alive in Chassidus is letters. Letters are rooted deep in consciousness, but they go through gradations, phases to come actually out of the mouth. So the Torah shel Baal Peh, I mean that means, you know, the Gemara, but it means also, al pi Chassidus, the Torah as it comes out of the mouth versus the Torah as it's in God's thought, or the Torah as it's in his, even before his, deeper than his thought. So he's Yeshiv, he comes down, he lowers himself and occupies himself in Torah. Pirish, which means Asmusi is Bara Kodesh Umuvdo. They explain the whole thing. God's essence is Kodesh Umuvdo. It's separate. Elisha Yeshe, but this essence itself comes down. And Yeshev Umashvilas Asmo. And he sits, he lowers himself. Lies Mislabish B'Torah. So his essence per se is always with him and only with him. But as it is still only with him, this is a little difficult perhaps to understand, because we're not like this, right? When we have an essence soul, so a deep part of our soul, and when we express a word, sometimes the essence goes with it. It's interesting now that I think of it. The more poetic, the more it's like poetry, the more essence is expressed. The more it's like a dissertation on something of biology, the less essence is expressed. But Hashem, since he's always everywhere, even when he's Kodesh and Mugdol, so when he expresses himself, something of his essence is embedded in everything that comes out of him. Just like a person, when a person moves from standing to sitting, the whole person is still there. So when God moves from his depths of the deep consciousness to more external consciousness, Torah, and then more external consciousness, the physical things of this world, he's there, but he's just expressing himself in lowered ways. Yeah.
Where does the concept after a dirty city, Babbage or Bookkeeper, Palatanya, plays a role, and why some are called Rebbe and some... and some are called, and some not, like the Baal Shem Tov or Kohen Levin or the Melech from Lezhensk. Lezhensk, he was not the Lezhensk Rebbe. So it's where is that?
He's got a few questions there, but he didn't ask one. We haven't seen the Rebbe and a Rav. You know, we use them very differently. We have a Rebbe in the Shiva, and we have a Rebbe who's the Tzaddik, right? And we have Moshe Rabbeinu, who is a Rebbe. So Rebbe sometimes connotes something like very special like a Tzaddik is a Rebbe. And then it also has a connotation of just the teacher, Moshe Rabbeinu. Rabbeinu, what does it mean? A teacher. Now, whether an Rebbe gets called by the name of the place, now the Alter Rebbe is not called by the name of the place, right?
Right.
And the other, and Eli Melech is
Rebbe.
No, but when you call him Rebbe, right? You call him the Alter Rebbe. Yeah. Yeah. Unlike Rebbe Eli Melech from Lublin, who gets the same to his location goes with it. I can't answer that. I don't know. Well, Shem Tov. Who's, what do we call the Baal Shem Tov? We just call him the Baal Shem Tov. Yeah, so he's called the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Yes, he is. But the Baal Shem Tov is not called the Baal Shem Tov of...
Some group is interchangeable. Some or Baba. Rebbe and Rav told the new Babas, but Rebbe and Rav is the same person. Babas, they don't call the Rebbe the previous Babas, they didn't call him the Babas Rebbe. They call a lot of people from the Babas Guru.
Guru. And then they call him, did they call him Rebbe when he becomes Rebbe, or it just stays?
No, I'm saying it's the same.
The Sadna Rebbe, Yavi Oil was called the Sadna Rebbe.
Right.
Yeah, he wasn't called the Sadna Rebbe.
And it was more like the Hungarian Galicia area.
I don't know, I really can't answer the question after all, but it's interesting.
Once things got so big and so spread out, and usually the last name or anything was associated with what you did or your family did or what your family was known for, so
right.
Or your location, right?
All of which goes to our topic, though. The name expresses something about something important. Okay. So the name expresses something. And this name, of course, is not the person. It's not just the parent. Back to our discussion about names given to children, and births, right at the time when a young woman is called up to the throne, the name is announced. This is a name that reverberates and comes from heaven, and it indicates quality to people. However, it's just a ha'ora. It isn't. It's a ha'ora, a ray from the person. And this aura is called the Hinnish Chain, or the name. Chain is Ziva Hora, which is just irradiation, a flow of something from the essence. It's not the essence, it's a descriptor of the essence. If you take, you know, you take the name Abraham, who's a citizen, Kabbalah, taken apart. Aver Ma, Abraham. Abraham is someone who all of Ma is in Kabbalah, is a name of God, which indicates bittul, total bittul. And Abraham was someone, all of his oborum, all of his limbs were totally nullified to service of God. Moshe, minamay meshisuhu, he was drawn out from the water. So the water, the name that's given to it in Russian Kodesh, in the Holy Tongue, expresses something that's essentially connected with the person. But the name itself is just a ray, an illumination. So we said, right, you are he who is before the world was created, and you were the same he after the world was created. And we say that before the world was created, there was just he and his name. So as we were saying, what does it mean? As we said, on the one hand, name is just appropriate and necessary so people can call you, but on the other hand, it's an expression of who you really are in essence. So there was only he and his name. Hainu, meaning what? Hamakav hashorash yechelis, the yesh ba'insob boruchu, this name that was only when he was alone before he actually expressed himself refers to the root and the source of this energy that will come out of him, but before it comes out of him, as it's rooted in the ancient Bible, Shiyochali is really and is able to come to revelation in a manner of a ziva or Shiyamimenu his Havisolimus, which from that energy, which is hidden deep in his essence, the expression of that has the power to bring worlds into existence. Shiyala the Chesed Asoino, that the world should go according to God's desire. Ukamoi ziva shemis, like the ray which comes from the sun, when that ray is kolob ma'or, when it's included in the sun, which is the shemesh asma. So the sun, one of the reasons is this is such a good marshal. The sun is designed to irradiate. If you were on the sun, you wouldn't be experiencing radiation. You'd experience tremendous heat, and it would be utterly destroyed by it. But its goal, its role, is to illuminate. So that heat and that fire is designed to come out in lesser and lesser intensities so they can give life. So, in a similar but different, God himself, the notion of creation is embedded deep, deep, deep inside of him. And it comes out, and that's who Shmo Yilvad. Shmo is going to be an effusion from him, but in essence it's deep, 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 and it comes out. So we're getting to the difference between Shmo Yagadol and Shmo Yakad. Big name and small. The essential name as it is within, the big name and the small name as it comes out. This week is Shmos. Shmos. Names. Hi, Dory. I'm going to move down to this bracket down here, but before I do, let's pause. And what's on anybody's mind or questions people have? Any questions on your screen?
Just that one.
Just that one. That's sociological.
Anybody want hot water?
Okay, so five lines from the bottom. Zehu inin shmei hagod. This is God's great name. Doreen, if you're looking, it's in the left-hand column. So five lines from the bottom is a bracket. Zehu inin shmei hagod. This is his great name. Right? God has two names. We're discussing pairs here. Two kinds of colors, two kinds of chasanim, two levels of names. This is the big name. Shelamayla min estalsos. This is the name that's deeper than, and I always translate this word lamayla and lamata as deeper than, because there is no higher and low. Higher and low refer to place. And before and after refer to time. And when Chassidus uses the word lamayla min estalsos, it means above time and place, deeper than time and place. So there's that great name. Who you are embedded in the depth of who you are, before it becomes expressed. And all of us have a yearning, that's the kawah, but to express it. There's something deep inside of everybody that needs to be expressed, which is one's essence. And if it isn't expressed, one is not only frustrated, but it can lead to tremendously negative behaviors. Somehow a person has to find a way to express oneself, just like God did. I'm being more anthropomorphic than the Torah is, which is, we couch God in language of man, right? Because we're man is created in his image. So if you can say such a thing, kaviyachol, there's a need in God to express himself. Not a need like us, but there's a natural, his being is a being which initially is not revealed, but there's a drive in him to reveal. All of it at Sonny Libre rose up in his will to create. So similarly, there's something deep in us which rises up in us and wants to be expressed. And if it's not expressed, and it's frustrated and it's cut off, then we have issues. So we all have this Shmei HaGod, this great name, this deep essence. But here we're talking about God, which is higher than reason, higher than any expression. For Shmei HaGod, And that's what we say. We started with this line from David. What we are praising, when we praise and beautify Adead infinitely, we're beautifying and praising the Ein Sof, the infinite. And this is what it means. This is the level of God where he is alone. He is totally united. He has no parts, no differentiations. He's yachid, he's alone, and he's undifferentiated. And on contrasting with that, when he comes out of his essence, so to speak, and shows his other name, his shlema kotten, his small name, into the like a drop of water in the ocean, they say. So then, that's when he's a melech. Melech comes out and reveals his malchus. Yistalshelus olam is the whole descent of worlds, ein derech ela ba'olam. It's not cause and effect. And here he's going to differentiate between the way God comes out of himself with another kind of process of one thing evolving from another, which is cause and effect. Right? I throw this pen. The guys can't see, unfortunately. I throw the pen and it causes something, right? It bounces, right? And the popcorn pops. That's the Ilava Olam. That's cause and effect, right? And there's something, the influence of the causer is embedded now or is experienced by the affected thing. So he's going to say this. The cause and effect. Yeshini b'ha'ilu. The cause actually gets affected. You might see the pen having, I mean, it won't work with this pen, a dent or something. The cause gets affected when it's in a cause and effect relationship. Ayideh, through the hashva that it gives, through the flow that it gives. Here's one you can read. When a teacher relates to a student, the teacher has to be affected. Not only even before the teacher teaches, the teacher thinks about, at least a good teacher thinks about, what is he going to say or she say that's appropriate for the Talmud, right? So there's one of my teachers, in Minnesota. Great, the fame of this. So, oh no. I want to say it for shame, I can't. My teacher said, when you think about speaking, you have a speaking engagement. Or you're speaking to someone. Say what they need to hear, not what you need to say.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's the thinking that goes on in the teacher before he opens or she opens her mouth. So the teacher is already being affected before the teacher gives over the hashpah. So the hashpah, so the causer is already changed before that causer has an effect on the affected. Okay,
one more time.
I'll say it in his words. Sherab mashvila talmid, when a rab gives over to a talmud, the hechrik masim iyunay the hashpah. You have to say that the Rav is concentrating on what the Rav is going to give over. So there's already a change in the Rav, in the teacher, before he teaches. And his mind is not free to think about things the way his mind was free before he thought about giving something over. That's the thing by Rav. And that's said himself. Because is affected by being involved with an effect.
But can't we say Hashem is above cause and effect?
You got the next line. When it comes to God, we say, you are the same. You are the same before the world was created, and you are the same after the world was created. Without any change. So how does this work? Isn't he the cause of all causes? Right? That's the expression he is about that. The cause of all causes. Well, this is because the source of the life force of worlds is only from his name. It's not from his direct essence touching. He
exudes a name, and that name goes on and reverberates in creation. So therefore, there's no shini, there's no change to him. It's only his name, or his name is his malchus. At the level of malchus, there are changes. As you said, name is bechinas malchus. So, hello, and we're deep into this, so I hope you'll be able to catch it. Just have a new arrival. All right, let me take this over. Any questions about this loop, please? Sometimes the lack of questions means it's so mysterious, I don't know what to ask. Yeah. Okay. So then how does God create, right? He's deep in himself, and an expression that's used in Kabbalah is it rose up in his mind to create. And what did he do? He came even more out of himself, so to speak, from his mind, into his so-called brain, seichel, about intellect, as an organ, right, which is the appropriate organ for intellect, which is brain. So we call it his brain, maya. And then it comes from the brain into his mouth. It seems to be going through the same stages that anyone does when you want to express something. You think about it, you know, and you have someone across the table from you, you want to give it over, so you start talking. But when you do that, you have a little bit of thought about how you're going to speak. If you know the person at all, you try to come out with words which are appropriate. But we say God has, when his initial creation is not like, because he doesn't go through any changes, like the changes we do when I think about what am I going to say to you. I see somebody's face, and I have a reaction to it. I'm now choosing the appropriate words for, what do you say to this person? You see this person is in such a mood. I'm changing always. We're always changing when we have interactions with other people. Okay, but when it comes to Hashem, this is the bracket. You're on page number two, the first bracket. For the MS, in truth, Niskav Shemei Levad, this is an expression from the Torah, Niskav, his name is always with him, held with him. The things that come from God's name, like the various names that we spoke about earlier, we didn't speak about Shem Havaya, Yud Kei Vav. That's a very essential name, because the name itself, Yud Kei Vav Kei, can be broken into two words, Yud Havaya, continual bringing into being. That's the name of Havaya. And another name is Elohim. And it means something different. Elohim is a plural. So from singularity to plural, you go from Havaya to Elohim, from singularity to plurality. But nevertheless, when he does that, this is not a cause and effect relationship. Shein came, if so, if it were a cause and effect relationship, since he is infinite, everything would be, remain infinite. Because infinite is touching something else, and it's passing on that quality. Ella, so how does he get...
But not all causes are the same.
No, he's saying he's not causing it. Huh? No, but when you give over something, you're giving over something from you, and you have to, the receiver has to take it in. So if I'm an angel, and that's all I am, I mean, I can't limit myself, right? So you're going to have to be able to take in infinity.
According to each person's, like...
How does each person take in infinity in a different way? If a person is by definition limited, right?
We have to filter ourselves. So the same Hashem filters himself. We have infinity, but we have cause. But he's still a cause.
Yeah, but he's not listening. We'll go further on.
Okay.
He filters himself, right?
Right.
And the big filter is called the Tzimtzum. If it weren't for the Tzimtzum, I'll explain. I'll say, if it weren't for the Tzimtzum, the big, there would not be any boundary between infinity and infinity. If without for that, so if he just bump,
there would be nothing finite.
It would be all infinite.
Right.
It would be all infinite. Right? Okay, yeah, that's the solving the problem. And what? We're just a little ahead of the game. Hanshocha Agyadei Simson. His being created is not in this bump, cause and effect, you know, this thing hits that thing and it spills over the water on the table. Right? No, it's not like that. He's not passing on himself, which is infinite. Because if he did, everything would be infinite. So he does this magic, this thing called Simson. This is like totally like one of the big ideas, if you would say so, this thing in Kabbalah. That through the way that Hashem creates, is he has to create something that's totally unlike him, that has not infinite, that isn't infinite, yet he's going to invest himself in it. One of the clearest examples to me of that is the Torah. Why I pick that? Because there's a lot of Hasidus written about the first word of the Torah, of the Ten Commandments. Not the Chumash, when that mountain Torah, the Torah was given. And we have heard this before. Anoiti Hashem Elokecha. I am Hashem Yehovah. And the word anoiti is understood from way back to be a Rosh HaTevis, an acronym for four words. The Aleph is Ani, I, Nafshi, not myself, Yahavez, Pas Yahavez, and wrote myself and gave, Kitzavez, and Yahavez, and gave myself into it. So I gave my I, the infinite God, gave infinity in a package. I packaged infinity in something finite. That's a big deal. That doesn't compute. You know what I mean? How do you package infinity in finite? There are two opposites on it. So they can't, that's why he said it can't be cause and effect. Because it wouldn't work. It wouldn't work. You need something very special, which is called a Tzimtzum. The Tzimtzum, in many places in Hasidus, after explaining the Tzimtzum, the Rebbeim would say, either dilemmate, easy to understand, or we don't really understand it at all.
I'm not understanding the comparison, because a teacher has a certain level of knowledge above a student, right? That's why they're the teacher, and the student is the student, usually. And even the teacher has to understand the student, and they, like you say, like
right.
And the teacher has to funnel their knowledge into a way that the student can understand. How is that not any different than we were talking about cause and effect between a teacher and a student in the same way Hashem is with us?
Because in the Tzimtzum, this is the paradox of the Tzimtzum. What you've explained is a very natural thing. I'm going to diminish myself. Right? I'm not. If I'm Einstein explaining physics to a sixth grader, I've got to really go through some changes in my head to figure out how I'm going to. There's a big change. So one thing we know about Hashem, I need Hashem,
you're not changing your knowledge, you're changing the way you're giving over your knowledge.
That's the way, I'm changing the way I'm giving it over.
Right, but his knowledge.
As you said, there's a change in my knowledge. There's a change in the way I deliver the knowledge.
Right.
My words are different, everything is different. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything is different. It has to come down to this level. And included there, when I do that, there isn't everything. If you understand that water, when you boil water, the higher you boil it, the higher you heat it, it's going to boil. So you understand it's a boiling. You don't understand yet anything. Is it true? You just understand that's true. And that's all I want to tell you to. First day in class. I just want to tell you that there's a 212 degrees water boils, and that's an interesting physical phenomenon. Why it boils? My point isn't the temperature. I mean, why does it boil? I haven't told you. You haven't got anything about it. You haven't got anything about the essence of the thing at all. In the Tzimtzum, Hashem passes his essence through a contraction. He doesn't make the teaching smaller and smaller and smaller. Otherwise, the Torah would just be another interesting book of philosophy, you know, everything comes from God, right? Even secular wisdom comes from God. The Chachamim themselves say, if you meet a guy, a non-Jew, and he says, there's Chokhmah amongst the Jews, there's wisdom amongst the non-Jews, believe him, the Torah says it. But if he says there's Torah amongst the Jews, don't believe it, because Torah is a different phenomenon. Huh? Torah what? Not meant to non-Jews. Yeah, there is Chokhmah. And Chokhmah, all Chokhmahs come from Torah. Everything comes from Hashem. Right? Everything comes from Hashem. But Torah.
That's an exaggeration,
Torah,
because you have the Christians who base everything off their Bible, the Old Testament. You know.
What was your point?
How is that a phenomenon?
What is that? What do you mean, how is it a phenomenon?
What was the expression that you said?
Yeah, the expression from Chazal is, if a non-Jew says there's wisdom amongst the non-Jews, believe it. If he says there's Torah amongst the non-Jews, don't believe it. Because Torah is a phenomenon that's unique. Essence of God is being passed into infinity, is being passed into 20. It's not just a lower explanation, but you know there's a boiling point that you don't understand physics. Everything every nekuda of the Torah is full of God Himself.
You're not getting
the
okay.
Every letter. Every letter of the Torah is full of God. Now that's a phenomenon that comes through not through cause and effect. It comes through what's called simson. And it's called dealer. It's called a jump. Loosely translated, it's a quantum leap. You know what a quantum leap is? Do I know what a quantum leap is? No. But I've read about it and I can describe it. If you were to jump up in the air, I could follow your path. Right? In a quantum leap, you can't follow the path. In no change of time, it exists in this place and then another place. It boggles the mind. Everything we're experiencing is in the domain of time. Right? It takes time for you to jump from the ground up 10 feet. They've observed phenomena at the atomic and subatomic level where an electron is in this place and that with no time. That's a rough approximation. Divinity.
Would that be like comparable to like the Rebbe writing letters to someone and getting completely lost and it arriving by them exactly
sure.
What it needs to be?
This is
like without it, the Rebbe didn't put a time. Like wasn't like.
I remember an early story when I first came here, which blew my head, and it's on this theme. It's hosted in Europe. When the time of the Friedrich Rebbe, he was in Europe, and the Friedrich Rebbe was here, and you know many Hasidim were separated from him. And he went, he was having a tough day. And he don't remember the circumstances, even if he was told in the story. Then it was a rough day. And he picked up a shoe and threw it against the wall, and it happened to hit a picture of the Friedrich Rebbe. And then years later, when he did come to him now, and he met the Friedrich Rebbe, without saying anything, as he passed by, the Friedrich Rebbe said, "It still hurts." So he's a phenomenon. That's how I remember. Okay, go. Let's put the mic by you. Tell the story.
Someone went to the Rebbe and asked them what they should do. He wasn't sure. So the Rebbe said, "So send a telegram to the Friedrich Rebbe." Well, he wasn't the Friedrich Rebbe. Then send a telegram to the Rebbe. And the guy said, "I don't remember the story, but he couldn't send the telegram." The Rebbe said, "Go send it, because the telegram doesn't have to be sent to arrive. The Rebbe doesn't have to get it, and you don't have to get his answer."
Right.
and then right afterwards, the person felt very strongly about making the sermon.
So that's it. That's the difference, right? That's a good way of describing the difference between a teacher and a divine, a good sensor. Okay? So he creates, not like a teacher giving and designing everything at a lower level, but he takes infinity and he puts it in the finite. Ali Beit Simpson, the dealer, which is a jump. That's why I get the quantum leap, a jump. Achinim Sharat Vichinis Ka Bechud, until the essence is drawn into a line, a string, which brings up string theory, which I won't talk to at all. But it's interesting, jump, leap and string. Memalthus de Ainsa. So the essence becomes string out. Not strung out, but in a string, the Malchus de Ainsof from the level which is called Malchus of Infinity, the Oid, huh? It's 9:30. That's the alarm. And we promised an hour. Thank you very much. All right, we're going to just reach to the end of the topic. Malchus of Ainsof. Okay. Malchus is actually the lowest of the ten spheres. It's okay. The lowest of the ten spheres.
So I thought Malchus.
But you're right. Like you, now when you mention chesed, you become right. Because Malthus of the water of the top, Malthus of the top sphere becomes the crown of the lower sphere. So it's the top of the world below. So Malthus is Hashem's kingship, his expressing kingship. But what you have to get used to is everything that comes from Hashem goes through a process of coming down, level after level after level. So let me give an example. I'll give an example from recent Tanya. Letters. When I write a letter with a pen, so that's a very physical expression of the letter. Where did that letter come? It didn't come from my pen. My hand doesn't manufacture, nor the pen. These things don't manufacture letters. They're just instruments by which we can describe a letter. Right? The letter comes from somewhere else. Right? The letter, well, where actually did these letters come? Well, if I'm writing, the external expression is the pen. If I'm speaking, the external expression is my mouth. But they didn't come from my mouth. My mouth is just an instrument. Right? So we refer to Malthus as Malthus Peh in Suzoha. Malthus Peh Torah Shebalpeh. Malthus is the mouth, and it's called the oral Torah. The Malthus of, but it has a source. It has a source deeper than, like letters. Go back to the letters. Where are the letters? The letters have a source. If I didn't have an active and useful brain, I couldn't speak any letters at all. So I have in my brain a koyach hamedaber, a power to speak. That power to speak also has letters, but they're not in any way the same. They're not tangible. They're intellectual, mental, right? But I'll tell you something that's very interesting, that in this day and age of technology, there are, what did you saw, I think Yashi Chris didn't show you his kids running at the computer with a headset around their head? But he told you, right? But there are devices now you can put on your head and think to the screen. And read your dream. Yeah. Think to the screen. Now, how is that possible? The physics of it, I don't understand. I've never looked into it. But it could only be possible if letters exist, albeit in a very rarefied way, in the head. Right? Now, the head itself has deeper than it. Where does the brain goes back to the mind. Now, once you're talking mind, you're talking more spiritual than physical. What is, people wrestle with this defining, what is the mind? Right?
Consciousness.
The brain.
What is consciousness?
What are concepts?
Consciousness.
What is consciousness? Right? Okay, so now we go back. We've got words, we got Malthus coming out of the mouth, we got Malthus in the brain, we got Malthus in the seichel. The seichel comes deeper than that. So this is the letters as the letters of, what was the expression we were explaining here? Malthus to Ein Sof. Malthus to Ein Sof is the letters, the power of speech as it exists, that in its origin in the infinite. Yes, in the mind of God. And on our letters, there's a whole parak in Tanya about Oisius. It starts with Oisius. It's a big Yiddish. It's a big novelty for people who, like myself when I first read it. Letters precede everything. Back, way back deep in, when it rose up in God's will to create, is already the beginning of the letters. Yeah, I think we're off sense. So we're talking about coming out from the existential essence into the more external attributes of reality. And the metaphor here is a beam and a string, and that's really from Malthus to Ein Sof. Extrusion from the deepest levels of God consciousness into actual speech. And this is the tzimtzum, and there are many, many tzimtzum, many, many tzimtzumim by which infinity gets put in a box, which, as I say, is a paradox. But God, one of the expressions that the Kabbalists use to describe what God is called Hasoivel Hafok, the one who is able to carry paradox. By him, Hafokim, opposites, right, Hafokim. By him, opposites are no opposites. There are no opposites. They're all part of him. Him. All right? So that's it. That he's Soibel Hafah. And it goes through many, many Simsumim. And through the Simsumim, the opposites emerge, good and evil, hot and cold, Chesed and Gevurah. But they're all rooted in a unity in him. And the only way, and in each one of them, Chesed and Gevurah, good and evil, divinity exists. Nothing can exist without divine energy. So how does that happen? Through the Simsum. The Simsum is the beginning. And then after the Simsum, you have what they call parsois, curtains, and coverings, which make divine energy even more and more hidden until they appear, divinity appears totally darkened into what we call the sitra, the other side. The other side also gets its life from divinity. Nothing can exist without the energy of Hashem in it. It's just simsim after simsim, covering after covering, until you get, and there are many of these ad ein mispur without any counting. And in the interest of our commitment to time.